Chianti.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars coming at you live from Italian Car Day Atlanta. It's an overcast day, but it's actually kind of nice outside, and there's a lot of eye candy around this lot. Let's check in with the folks we have around the table today. First, we've got Ben.
Hey.
And Dawn.
Oh, I'm here. That's right. I'm supposed to be looking at cars. That's all I'm doing here is eye looking at cars. I'm here.
And Dave?
Ciao, Bella.
Yes, sir. And let's just jump right in. I know it's easy to get distracted because there's a lot of cool things happening around us. And if I drift off mic, I apologize. It's been a while since we've actually done an in-person live recording. We've been, you know, pandemic has restricted us to doing stuff in our, you know, respective living rooms. But we're glad to be out in person today. And, let's start our episode as usual with a moment of Grand Trivia Auto. And I'm going to hand that over to Ben. There's actually a little bit of madness to his method today. Ben, take it away.
Right. Well, we're trying to give away these two motorcycle books from our friends at Motor Books. Have been so kindly sent to us. One is Vespa, Style and Passion, and the other one is The Complete Book of Moto Guzzi. And, of course, if you read our blog, I've written reviews there of both of them. So I've got a question for each book. The trivia question for the Vespa book is... Vespa is more than a name. It's actually a word in the Italian language for a certain type of animal. The question is, what is the animal that Vespa is the Italian word for? And the trivia question for the Moto Guzzi book is that Moto Guzzi is located in a very scenic part of Italy. And in fact, it's located next to a natural feature that is a real big tourist draw. What is that natural feature?
So... the first question is, what animal is a Vespa?
Yeah, what is Vespa? The Vespa is the Italian word for what animal?
Right. And Moto Guzzi is located where? That's the second question.
Yeah, where near what natural feature that draws tourists in Italy?
What natural feature draws tourists to Italy? I
have
a guess.
Those are two really good trivia questions.
Yeah, you can practically see it from the factory.
So we're going to be opening those questions up to the public here. And if anyone gets those questions, they'll walk home with these really cool one of these really cool books, right?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Unfortunately, I don't think anybody actually brought either a Vespa or a Moto Guzzi today. So,
yeah,
that's sad. Don't see any.
Yeah. Okay, good. So we'll answer those questions later on in the show. And right now, I think we're going to jump right into a cultural collision segment that I know both Dave and Ben are probably going to go head-to-head on. The issue is, why don't we see more Italian cars in the American market? And, I mean, there's plenty of cool stuff to look at. I mean, even just sitting here on the Ferrari and Maserati lot, there's a bunch of super expensive cars, but not a lot of it. I mean, there's a good number of Italian manufactured cars that are, not that expensive and anybody can get them. So, you know, an everyman car does exist. Why don't we see those things here? Dave.
You know, it's, first of all, I got to describe the scene we're looking at because I'm looking up the tailpipe of a Pantera. So I'm going to be easily distracted, but they have
You're
arranged
looking up at two. Actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
They have the lot set up with a line of Maseratis and then a line of Ferraris and then a line of Fiats and a line of Alphas. And so this is a little bit of, you know, an Italian car lover's wet dream all in one place. Before we got on the air, Ben and I were having a conversation about why don't you see more Italian cars in the States in general, and especially in the United States. And because Don and I are both faculty members, I'm like, well, let's just research that. And
so we're sitting here,
I pulled out my iPad and pulled up this article from Business Insider from 2016. And it talked about how that basically in the 1980s, 1990s, there was this huge pullback of Italian cars from the American market, and they didn't really start coming back in mass until 2010 and like 2016. When this article was published, they said they had more Italian cars in the market than they had in the previous 27 years. The reason Business Insider put out for that was that, you know, the Italian cars retreated from the North American market because they were largely had a reputation for unreliability. And Fiat was the first one that came back with the reliability, reliability message. I will freely own that I have been in relationships where I have equated high maintenance partners to Fiats. So perhaps I'm also guilty of that reputation. But Ben, what were your thoughts?
Well, yeah, kind of along similar lines. There was the reliability issue for a long time. I think also there was a little bit of a divergence in what the market really wanted. They never completely disappeared from our shores. The higher end brands, you know, yeah. Ferrari and Lamborghini and Maserati stayed here, although Maserati was on the ropes for many years. They haven't really come back that much, I don't think. I mean, yeah, you know, Fiat through its relationship with Chrysler merger, I guess, you know, they and Alfa Romeo is a product of that too. They're both here, but you don't see them out a whole lot. So they still haven't really caught back on that much.
Wait, so did they address their reliability issues or not?
Well, one of the things, at least my experience with them when I was in college, I was dating somebody who had an Alfa, and Ben described the electrical system beautifully. It was like, you know, a massive spaghetti inside, and very small, fine wires in a very complex, jumbled pattern. Most of the reliability seems to have been, at least my experience, tied to the electrical systems. And I think, you know, all cars have gotten better in terms of electrical systems over the last 20 years.
Oh,
when,
yes.
When, you know, the person I was dating used to always say, and this was in college, said, you know, she always was complaining about putting the car in the shop, and said, you're an engineer, why can't you fix it? I'm like, I'm an aerospace engineer. If you want to get it airborne, I'm your boy.
Yeah. I think, too, the 1970s was really a low period, not only for the Italians, but the British as well. That killed both countries' products in our market. You know, my dad had spent the most of the 1980s keeping a pair of mid-70s Alphas running. And of course, I was a young lad with an eagerness to learn about cars, so I was out there in the garage with him the whole time. And I remember some of these adventures, you know, and one of those Alphas he bought was not reliable when he bought it, but by the time he was done with it, he would drive anywhere in it.
Dawn, have you ever owned an Italian car?
I've not. I have been fortunate enough to drive them in Italy. And my thinking is really they're cars that were to be driven and yeah. not just to go to your local grocery store or haul your kids to school or even to go to work. They really are cars that need to be driven. And Italians don't just park their car and use it for the commute. They take their cars and they drive them beautifully through their hillside in the Piemonte. And in Rome, they smush six cars to three lanes. I have a feeling, you know, the love of Italian cars is really about the love of the road. And they're just not as practical, even though maybe they're more reliable. They're, you know, when you look at them, you don't think about sticking a bunch of stuff in your trunk. And it's, I think Italian cars are really people who love cars.
That's right. True. There are not many cars right in front of us where you're going to put two golf bags in the trunk.
And if you're lucky, you fit two people in the car. I mean, these are cars to be driven by drivers.
Although, in all fairness, nobody has really brought an everyday Italian car
no.
to this show.
That's true.
You know, the Alphas that people and Fiats that people drive day to day over there.
Well, maybe that's part of the problem. I mean, we're used to thinking of Italian cars as being eye candy. Sexy cars, and righteously so. But maybe the American market simply hasn't seen, you know, the daily driver versions that they have
there
overseas.
There are millions of working class Italians who drive like everybody else around the world.
Yep. Right.
Oh, they walk a lot, and they take their bikes. Because if you're trying to drive in Rome, forget it.
Oh, right. God. I remember one time, you know, watching somebody, like five people just pull up in the middle of the road and get out of their car and leave it running in the road to go into a coffee shop.
Yes.
And then they sat down to have coffee.
And their car's still driving, running.
Yes, the car's still driving and running. And like, okay, are you getting coffee or are you abandoning it?
Can I take it?
Please, someone steal it. Yes.
I'm pretty sure that'll fit in a Delta overhead bin.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
All right, so does the Italian car market ever have a chance of getting a foothold in America?
You know, if I've learned anything in 25 years of marketing in America, anything is possible. Yeah, likely is a different matter. I think the advantage of some Italian cars, I'll equate it to the current Fiats and even, you know, the craze for Mini Coopers. If you're living in cities, if you're living in small places, they just fit better.
They do.
So something that is fun to drive and fits better. yeah, I think there's definitely a market for it. And we've talked about this before. There's always a market for a midlife crisis. But
and the question is, are they marketing to us? And
that's right.
You know, they're not. You're not seeing, even, you know, regularly you'll see Mercedes, BMWs advertised on regular advertising. You're not going to see a Maserati or a Fiat either side advertised to us
at all.
Yeah. You know, it's at one point in my career I had to buy a lot, you know, millions of dollars of wine every year.
Oh, you had to?
Okay. I had to. And after I got out of Betty Ford, I realized what a great experience that was. But it's the same thing with Italian cars are almost a gourmet product.
Yeah.
You don't see Amarones or Vallopiccellas
or Nobbiolas or get into the Piedmontes with the Super Tuscans.
They don't advertise those things because they don't need to.
Right.
Yes. If you don't know about us, we don't want you. Yes.
Well, and speaking for Atlanta, I can't speak of other American, you know, major metropolitan areas, but even scooter culture is not here.
Not
know?
Really.
Yeah. You know, we've tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scooter culture could be here. Yeah. In Atlanta or even in, you know, Gwinnett or someplace, but it's
something that in another episode I could go on about.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to bookmark that for later.
I mean, there's also a whole infrastructure to any of this. If you're talking about scooters, there are places, you know, we finally have places to park bikes in Atlanta.
Yes.
That's mm-hmm. taken a very long time. We finally have bikes that are able to ride in lanes with cars in the Georgia and the Southeast. So the infrastructure is important to it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dave, you said it was distracting, and I agree. It's totally distracting looking up the rear end of these Panteras that are in front of us. And I desperately want to take one home. But what else is catching your eye today?
Oh, let's see.
Counting the drivers.
There are a couple of hot drivers here too.
I like the guy in the full leather.
Yeah.
It's, with the knee pads. What is that about?
Yeah, the leather bicycle suits really have caught my attention. Like, oh yeah, is there a motorcycle with him? I hadn't noticed.
Two more walking up behind you, Don.
Yeah,
other side.
They got their armor
nice,
on.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, Mickey. What did you ask me?
And I'm going to ask everybody this eventually, but you know what here is catching your eye today?
The alphas.
Yeah.
I love a small roadster convertible, and to Don's point, to actually just get out, and especially in the North Georgia mountains, to drop the top and go drive through the mountains. This time of year in a car like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a sensual experience.
Sure.
And you can't really talk about any Italian product without using the word sensual.
I think that's fair. I think that's
maybe
absolutely
Berlusconi,
fair.
Maybe Berlusconi, but other than that.
I think these 70 Ferraris are cute.
I was going to ask, is that what's turning your head?
That is definitely because it's such a 70s car, but in the classiest of ways. You know, there are a lot of 70s cars. You're like, glad they stayed there. Glad they're in junkyards. Not this Ferrari. These are very, very gorgeous. Yep.
Yeah, they're pretty.
A mail truck just pulled through. That's kind of hot.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the older ones. Aren't they supposed to be scheduling those out for Sprinters?
Yeah, well, not Sprinters, but the Metris van.
Ah.
In fact, I've already spotted a Metris on my street delivering mail.
Yeah, and the one coming to my neighborhood is actually a Dodge Sprinter now.
Oh, wow.
So maybe, I don't know. Anyway.
I'm glad to see that there aren't just red cars here.
Yes.
I love the nuanced pearl colored cars. There's some beautiful cars along one line that are those browns that you, not the dirty browns, but the pretty, the pretty like pearly
copper
browns.
Tone.
Copper.
Not
copper
your crap colored car, mister.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the yellows.
Cafe au lait, that's what they are. Our mochas.
Yeah. Well, there's a metallic blue Alpha Spider that belongs to a friend of mine that's here. That's, I think, one of the really gorgeous cars.
Yeah.
And there's a Ferrari 308 in a dark metallic gray that's gorgeous.
Ben, what's turning your eye?
Oh, I see that one.
Well, that 512 Berlinetta Boxer that's just behind my left shoulder. I think it's the one Dawn was talking about a second ago. That one for sure. The Alphas, a couple of the launches are really cool, too.
Yeah, the launches are cool.
We were talking earlier, there are no Lamborghinis here.
Yeah, no. What's up with that?
I said that an announcement before we started recording. Although we have watched them drive by.
Yes.
You wonder, like, hey, were they invited and they've chosen not to come, but they want to know what they're missing?
But they're shaking their tail feathers as they pass us. Yeah.
They think their glorified Audis are too cool for us.
Yeah, what's up with that? Why can't Lamborghini represent?
I don't know.
There are some in the local area. There's a good number of them, especially the Gallardos and the smaller models. There are some of the bigger, pricier ones, too, but you really rarely see them. I think they go to caffeine and octane more than anything.
Yeah. So what's turning my head is purely either engine or nostalgia. I love an engine that looks like it could rip my face off, which is why the Panteras are screaming at me.
That's true.
And but otherwise, wow. I like the X19s. I like the Fiat X19s.
Oh, yeah.
There's just a certain hearkening back to just the, an easier day, right? An easier time and an introduction to style that the world had not seen at the time. That's what's turning my head these days. Although I would love to go home with the Maserati. And Ben is saying, and this is our next segment, I guess. Ben is trying to tell me that I don't want a Maserati.
Yeah, really? I don't want to disparage, anybody's, love, but...
especially because they're hosting us.
Yeah.
But they're not the ones that are collectible out here either.
They're not. So.
Well, late model Maseratis, I've heard, don't have the best reputation for durability and reliability once they get past a certain age. Of course... Everybody would say, well, Italian cars, but
also say that about a Mercedes. There are all kinds of high-end Mercedes these days that you could get for a song because past a certain age they tend to fall apart.
And they all still work as long as you do keep them maintained and repaired. But what that costs to do after a certain age as well.
Yeah.
Is a factor for sure. That's why there are a lot of about 10-year-old high-end German cars that are on the market for four figures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think it depends on how much you're willing to put in and keep the car really, really well. And of course, with the Maserati, you're going to have to take it into the dealer. You're not going to find even Mercedes and BMW. You can get a local mechanic to work on. It is hard to get a local mechanic to work on those cars.
Yes.
Well, I confess my interest in the Maserati is that it just looks like a car that everybody's favorite mobster gangster has designed and built. And it just comes into the room wearing a sport coat that clearly has a gun that's too big to conceal under it. And, it's going to kick ass and take names and then have some spaghetti and forget about it.
You could cultivate a mobster look in a Maserati.
And on the positive side.
We'll get you a fedora.
Uncle Mickey.
On the positive side, they are part of the, Fiat Chrysler conglomerate. So they've got access to a lot of engineering. A lot of them have Ferrari-based engines.
Yes.
They've got sexy interiors.
And yes, they have.
I was going to say, their interiors are like
some of the most fabulous, leather interiors going.
I've stayed in 4-star hotels that aren't as nice
as them inside of a Maserati. Wow.
I remember a few years ago out in Los Angeles, I was at the Peterson Automotive Museum there, and they had they had basically the interior of a Maserati SUV set up in the museum there. Just all the seats and the dashboard and everything. And I remember sitting down in the seat, and just kind of going, and saying, can I just stay here for about a week? Yeah.
The last charity I ran, Maserati, was a sponsor one of our events. And we had it in an architectural stone gallery. And my CFO was the one who had brokered the arrangement, and the stone gallery was down the road from our offices. And he said, do you want to come watch them drive the Maseratis in through the architectural stone? I'm like, not really, no. I don't think my heart is up to that. And by the way, whose insurance is this on?
Reminds me, too, I had a neighbor who, when I was a kid, one of my neighbors down the street, and he just passed away a few days ago, so... rest in peace, Howard. But Howard was his name, and he was a grad school buddy of my dad's. And he always said he wanted a Maserati. And one day in 1973 or 4, he got one. Now, he was a psychologist working at a state hospital in Alabama, so he didn't buy a new one. But he got his hands on a 67 Mistral. Of course, this is a car that was only, 5-6 years old at the time. But... he was able to afford it because even in the 60s, they didn't hold value very well.
Right.
He brought the thing home. He was so proud of it. My dad and I rode with him in it one time going up for about a 3-hour cruise to the state line and back. And after that, it sat in his garage for years because the engine blew up. And in the 1970s and early 80s, you know, from week to week, whether or not Maserati was even in business at the time was kind of anybody's guess. The engine had been sent back to Italy to be redone at the factory, and it sat in a crate there for years and years and years and years. They didn't get the engine back until about 1985 or 6, I think. And by that point, he was, you know, he just wanted to be done with it. And he advertised it everywhere from New York to Miami, and it still took a while to sell it.
Yeah.
But if he'd kept it a bit longer, if he'd kept it into the 2000s, it would really be worth something now.
Right.
So, that's the hard part, I think, with any car. It's like you got to get over that hump. You got to get to that 25-year.
Right. They brought out a Mistral in the early 2000s, and so when that one came out, the old one suddenly became. I also don't know if his was one of the ones that they misspelled the name badge on, because those have a little extra collectible cachet.
Not many people know about that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Dave, would you introduce the last segment for us?
Sure. One of the things that we thought we would talk about also is just our experiences at car shows. You know, it's even coming from an automotive town, I haven't spent a whole lot of time in car shows. And the times I have gone, the three car shows I've been to have all been very different experiences. You can't see it, but I've dressed up today. I put a jacket on. I put an ascot on.
Oh, I thought that was just because you got out from the pandemic. You're wearing pants.
I'm wearing pants. I'm actually, this would only be the second time I've had on pants that weren't jeans.
Wow.
I still can bring myself for socks, but enough about my sartorial splendor. You know, sometimes the car shows like this one are about the car. Sometimes the car shows are about the see and be seen, and the cars are kind of, you know, ancillary to it.
Backdrops.
Backdrops. And you know, being new to this collective of car enthusiasts, I just wanted, you know, I thought it'd be fun if other people talked about their experiences with car shows.
All right. Well, you know, I have been dragged to car shows since I was a kid. So my dad, you know, had a 1964 Corvette Honduras red. And even when he didn't have that car, we would, if there was a car show, we were driving along, we would pull over and walk through the car show. And dad would oogle over all the cars. And mom would too. So and then both of my uncles worked for dealerships and were mechanics. And so from a young age, I got in the middle of car shows and funnel cakes and, you know, all of that good stuff. But then as older now, when we drive around, ballots are going over there. I do that same thing to Chris. We were up in the North Georgia Mountains last fall, driving back from a wine tour, and there were 1940s, 1950s, just about two little rows of cars with gentlemen they were so proud of these cars, and I had to stop. And I had to talk to every single one of the owners and find out why he had the car. And the problem was there was mostly men. That's the hard part about this. I want to get a car that I can stand here and be the one that someone comes and talks to. But my experience with car shows is that it's romantic and it's interesting. And there's a story behind every one of these cars.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben, I know you've been in various degrees of car culture all your life.
Oh, yes. I can't even remember an age at which I didn't know what they were, you know, and helping my dad in the garage ever since I could hold the tools. But, yeah, I think my first show was the World of Wheels in Birmingham, Alabama in 1977. Imagine a Civic Center convention hall filled to the brim of, you know, glorious chromed, customed hot rods and things. And I've been going to car shows ever since. I've been to everything from that to, you know, like these Italian events. I've been to a bunch of British car shows, which I've exhibited at a few times too, with one of the Lotuses I had. And I've even been to, there was one day over in Germany when I was in the army over there, I was helping a friend move. We were driving a Mercedes van full of all his worldly possessions. And we happened to go around a curve, around a valley. And in the middle of that valley, in the curve, we saw a sea of hundreds of air-cooled Volkswagens some kind of club meet. So we weren't in a hurry, so we pulled in and walked around and enjoyed it. So, yeah, I mean, you name it. Any kind of car show, you know, I'm game.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain, I'm going to use the word exhibitionism at play with people who just want to come out and show their stuff. And then
for community, too.
Community, exactly. That's exactly right. That's a much better word. But But people are willing to share their stories, right? And they're people are willing to share their passion about what they've brought. And that's what I like about car shows is, you know, the cars are great, but the cars are nothing without their people.
The rest of the year, they're probably driving their family members up the wall with constantly prattling on about their cars. So the chance to come out and talk to people who are genuinely interested.
Right.
So at Atlanta Pride every year, there is the Atlanta Pride car club.
Yes.
And they exhibit at Pride every year. And the people who set up, you know, they open up their trunks and they pull out tables and candelabras and that, you know, it's basically a big party, you know, in Piedmont Park. And then they load up and the next day everyone get basically all of the grand marshals or the dignitaries are riding in these gorgeous cars as they go down the Peachtree in the parade. And with the exception of my late congressman, John Lewis, God rest his soul, every year they would put him in something glorious, like, you know, an old Thunderbird, an old, you know.
T-Bird.
He would not get in the car. He would, like, basically walk the entire 10 miles shaking hands.
No kidding.
Yep. I saw the same thing at the Independence Day Parade downtown back in the 80s. Mayor Young, you know, I didn't even know where his car was because he was on foot and he was working it.
I was so proud. In 2018, I got to be in the Pride Parade because I was running for office and be in a Mustang. And I had been campaigning and I had tripped off stage and really messed up my leg. So I was on crutches and I could not walk the parade. So they got me a Mustang and I sat on the back and waved, and I'm like, I really want to go out and touch the people and talk to people, but I couldn't. But I got to ride in the Pride Parade in a Mustang. Becca
awesome.
Would be so proud of me. And I didn't know that. So in the future, Dave, you need to hook me up because I want to take, I will be glad to drive someone in my convertible.
You're on.
In my Mercedes convertible.
As soon as
I get that window fixed.
The window being, you know, the window in the Mercedes convertible will be the theme for the next 5 shows.
Until I get that daggone thing fixed, it will be.
So speaking of Becca, she's not here, but wanted to give her a quick shout. I wonder if she knows that Ford is actually still planning to put V8s out on their market. There's something I read about a particular V8 that they're going to keep in Mustangs and one other vehicle. But we'll have to ask her about that at some other point.
It's going to be in the Mach-E, just to drive her crazy.
Just to drive her crazy.
Yeah. A V8 and a Mach-E. Yeah.
That just seems wrong, right?
Something is wrong.
Well, that almost wraps us up for the show, except for we have to answer our trivia questions. Ben, can you guys think of anything else before we do that?
I don't know if anybody, you know, can think about any car shows in the future, but if they want to let us know about them, we would love to come and do a podcast and promote the event leading up to the show. So, you know, I think for the pandemic, this is a perfect opportunity. There's air flowing freely. Some people are wearing masks, being very cautious, you know, but I think we could do a lot to promote car events in the future and get out there and help y'all.
Exactly. And I think there's many ways we can collaborate to interact with the audience while we're doing the thing on site. We would definitely.
I think this is our first foyer, but it feels safe. It feels the air again. It's a beautiful fall day.
Oh yeah,
it is.
And
it is.
This is a great way to get outdoors and look at all of these amazing engineering.
Yep, Ben.
Well, I could just spill it, but before I do any of us present actually know the answers other than me?
I have an answer for the Moto Guzzi question. I think
I know the Vespa. And I, once you say the other one, I will know it. But I'm going to venture first on the Vespa. I'm thinking it's a small, like, wilderness cat in the mountains, like some kind of, like, not a lion, but, you know, like a lynx or something like that. That's my guess.
That sounds really cool. I would love to see one of these creatures, but it's incorrect.
Okay.
Dave, what's your guess?
Okay, totally guessing. So for the Moto Guzzi, I'm going to say it's near Mount Etna. And for the Vespa, I'm going to say mosquito.
You're warmer on the Vespa.
Oh, okay.
All right, so for the Vespa, I'm going to say lemur.
Italy?
So for the Moto Guzzi question, I'm going to say the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
But you said it was natural.
Yeah.
Oh, it's natural?
Yeah.
Yep.
Then the Vatican.
That's not natural. A from
which of these two is less natural would be a whole other debate too. But
I would like to revisit my Vespa answer. Is it a wasp?
It is a wasp.
Well done. That makes so much sense.
Well done.
If you look at the scooter from the side or from above, that kind of rounded, bustly back end sort of resemble, you know, next to that skinny little midsep. The answer for Moto Guzzi is the factory is located very close to the shore of Lake Como.
Oh.
Very beautiful area.
Nice. Wow. It's gorgeous.
I think the town they're located in is Mondello del Largo or Lario or something like that. The Italians listening will be, you know, cursing my mother for murdering the name of their town, but
we need to go to Italy.
Yes,
yeah,
we do.
We need to go visit that all of the makers of the foreign cars.
Yep.
Yeah, you know,
absolutely.
Rolls Royce.
We need to figure out
Porsche.
How to appropriate that. So thank you as always for joining us. This has been an episode of The Thing About Cars, recording live at the Italian Car Day Atlanta event happening here in Atlanta 2020. Lots of good eye candy. Please keep your ears peeled for us, and hopefully we can catch you at other car shows in the future. And we hope you and yours are staying safe out there. So we'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take care, you guys.
Have
fun. Arrivederci.
Ciao.
Yeah, ciao, Bella, ciao.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.